Welcome to Media Mavens,
a bi-weekly podcast where we discuss our favorite
or not so favorite
movies, shows, and games.
I'm Pam.
I'm Riley.
Let's get started. Hello and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 16. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hey.
How you doing, Riley?
Good. I'm excited for today's episode.
I'm also very excited for today's episode. Today, our guest is Jonathan. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm really good. Down where I am, like, I'm so happy that, unlike usual, it's very cool and windy down here in Florida. So this is just the mellowest day. This is the perfect day for a podcast recording.
Awesome. That's good. It got really cold here in Toronto really fast.
It did. I had to scrape frost off of my windshield for the last 2 days, and it's terrible.
No. So, Jonathan, do you want to tell people a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. Hey, I'm a general dude on games, Twitter, and such. Not as active right now, just because of my goodness, my job's been very, very hectic. It is really far away. But before all that, back when I was in university, I recorded Trash Yard Television with Apple Cider and Kotaku Boss, not in position, but in, you know, feeling and, you know, the spirit, Geeta Jackson. And yeah, schedules and just everything that was going on put that on hiatus for a good while, but I am so glad to be on a podcast again and be able to talk about something.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. I've wanted to have you on for a while. I remember before we even started the podcast, I was searching for guests and we talked a little bit about that. And I also really liked you on Trash Art Television. I enjoyed that. It's three very good hosts there.
Thank you so much. yeah, great times.
So I guess we can get right into what we've been up to in the last little while. Do you want to start, Jonathan?
Yeah, sure. So I mentioned how hectic my job is, and as a result, like, the way that I've gamed has changed a lot. Like, it got to a point where, besides being a poor college student for a good amount of time, it you know, didn't really make sense for me to have a full console. When I did play stuff that was relatively recent, it was like on the 360. So when I finally got some income and got my own thing, I just went ahead and picked up a 3DS, so I could play that on like my lunch breaks and stuff and just plop down on the bed as soon as I got home and jump into something. And what I've been playing recently, something that really jumped out for me is this indie game Severed by Drinkbox Studios. I think that's on the Vita and I think on smartphones too, maybe on PC as well. Anything that has any sort of swipe or like a real precision interface probably has it. And I really, really love it and the flow of it. I'm thinking back to Apple Cider's episode now. I want to be very particular about how I describe it in a way that really makes sense. It's a, first person backtracking dungeon game, I suppose you'd call those. Backtracking might be a better way than the Metroidvania thing.
Oh, okay.
This is the same studio that did, Guacamelee.
Oh, yeah.
I like Guacamelee.
So this game also has a heavy Mexican influence. It basically seems to take place in like a Mexican limbo. And your main character wakes up after some brutal tragedy that's happened that's killed off most of her family and just completely destroyed her family house. And this demon lord specter appears to you and hands you a sword and it's like, go out there. It's like, go do your thing. And it's this very beautiful art style. I'm not quite sure how to describe it. You kind of have to see it. It's not quite paper craft, but along those lines, it's got a lot of very beautiful, bright, like neon pinks and blues. Mm-hmm. And a thing I really love about this game is that as you're traversing the world and just going through things, very straightforward, you know, go straight left kind of thing through the map and filling in more portions of it. Despite all the backtracking, you really don't mind. In fact, you kind of gain an appreciation of it as an art piece as you're going through all these different spaces, because each different space is crafted with a lot of strong environmental bloom and all these gorgeous plants and vistas to look at as you're going through. So even if you're backtracking like two dungeons back or something like that, you're pretty much speeding through this diorama, maybe might be a good way of mm-hmm. describing it. And it just looks fantastic. Like, that alone makes it really worth playing.
Awesome. Yeah, it looks beautiful. I love when games have nice, bright color palettes, because so many of them are kind of dreary looking.
Yeah. That definitely makes it stand out from other dungeon-like games, too. And it feels a bit like, for me, a rhythm game. Just because when you get to actual combat, you're, you know, hitting the weak point. That's nothing new. But the touch controls do switch things up a little bit there. And you're also able to fight, like, up to and probably more than 4 enemies at the same time. So you get into an encounter, and you're surrounded on all sides, and each enemy has, like, their own flow. They have their own attack patterns, and they attack from different angles. So I always imagine my character kind of doing this blade dance sort of thing, where she's attacking one enemy and then twirling around, hitting another one, slashing another to fill up her titular severed meter. I think they actually call it something else, but filling up her focus meter. And once the meter's full, as soon as an enemy's HP's gone down all the way, it goes into this slow motion bullet time mode for, I think, like 2 seconds at most, and you sever off their limbs to collect their limbs as your currency to basically upgrade whatever powers and abilities you have. It's very quirky and cool.
I was about to say that took a dark turn.
Yeah. It's like collecting ears or something, right?
For currency. Gosh, there might be ears. There's like hands and tentacles and eyeballs from the weird looking almost like Persona monster type of characters that you're fighting throughout the game.
Well, that sounds really cool. I might need to check that out if I've got a system that'll play it.
I was just thinking that.
Yeah, I really recommend that. And another thing I've played is Luigi's Mansion. I never played the original on the GameCube or anything, but I just really appreciate how you can interact with almost anything in this game. Like, you're moving through as Luigi, and, you know, I'd never been, like, big on the, like, main Nintendo cast of characters or anything like that. But just this game, like, just one like, detail that I love is, like, you may see a bunch of, like, gaudy, broken down things laying around a room in this haunted mansion. And since your main, like, pack you're using to hunt ghosts is a literal vacuum, you can just suck those things up. And if you clean up a room, you suddenly get showered with a bunch of coins and stuff. And that's so cute. That's the most adorable thing.
That is adorable. Actually, somewhat related. I saw someone post on Twitter this really cute cosplay of like a child as Luigi with his little vacuum pack. It was so cute. I haven't played that one myself, although I feel like I've been seeing a lot of people talking about that one lately, maybe just because of the time of year.
Yeah, yeah.
And who I follow on Twitter in retro gaming.
Yes, yeah, a good time of year for it, and it also recently finally went down to $20 like a month or two ago because of Nintendo's notoriously keeping their games at full price most of the time.
Gosh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I guess my last thing would be fitting in with the theme of, I didn't even intentionally do that, talking about these kind of horror-themed games in a way. I watched Wes Craven's New Nightmare last week for like the third time, and it's pretty great. It is, I think, the most obscure Nightmare on Elm Street movie. Have either of you watched that one?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen any of the Nightmare on Elm Streets, actually.
That's not too bad, because they're mostly not great movies. I somehow sat through all of them, but they're a whole thing. But, New Nightmare was a cool thing, because of how, I guess, meta it was. Like, it's basically Nightmare on Elm Street taking place in the real world, sort of, with, like, the original actress who played, like, the first thing to a lead character that series had, being, like, gradually tormented by Freddy Krueger, peeking his way into the real world, and, bits of her like dealing with stalking that she had in real life, cameos by the director Wes Craven and the guy who plays Freddy Krueger, and amazing practical effects at the end, like hilariously, oh my god, hell no, what the hell is this kind of stuff. I really recommend that, especially if there are any like practical effects or fans listening.
Awesome, we do like practical effects, definitely. But yeah, I might give that one a go. I've been trying to watch more horror movies lately, getting a lot of good recommendations. So, Jonathan, was there anything else that you've been up to recently?
I'd also been watching, well, not watching, I'd also been listening and always anticipating every week the Still Processing podcast from Jenna Wortham and Wesley Morris of New York Times Magazine. It's pretty outstanding. They have about 50-minute-long podcasts, and their discussions just about general news items or pop culture subjects. They're really funny, smart black writers. And one thing that jumped out to me like this week was this episode where they went over Birth of a Nation, the movie Birth of a Nation, mm-hmm. that Nate Parker had starred in and wrote and directed and blah, blah, blah. And their complicated feelings around it. Well, really varied, not so much complicated. They came down in a pretty amazing way in the way that they put it, where Birth of a Nation, which is about Nat Turner, I believe. It was the Nat Turner Rebellions. Oh my goodness, I really hope I didn't get this historical name wrong. That, God, that'd be awful. They basically compared it to Braveheart, Like, it's the sort of movie that if it had come out in the 90s, it would have been such like a big deal about, you know, this movie that you just need to support because of how the black cinema landscape was different at the time. There was so few comparatively big films coming out. But now, especially with the way that it's actually made, it came off like really amateurish, and if black people out there were conflicted about, you know, wanting to support this movie but being really disgusted by Nate Parker's actions in upholding and perpetuating rape culture and the horrifying case he was involved in years ago, you don't have to feel conflicted at all, because it's just kind of this egomaniacal movie. And yeah, just their strong insights on that show are just the best ever. They have all sorts of perspective that I don't necessarily have. Like, one of them's a huge Barbra Streisand fan. Okay, sure. I don't know, man. So that's been really fun and enriching to overall, as I've been like filling out my podcast rotation, having way more black voices, especially black women, being able to listen to them on a regular basis.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. I have like 30 podcasts in my list right now, but there's always room for one more. I know, it's so many. I skip a lot. Like, a lot of the time, if people do a topic I'm not interested, I'll just skip it. But yeah, there's a lot of podcasts in there. Okay, Riley, what have you been up to?
So I've been playing a lot more Overwatch.
Has WoW broken its spell?
Yeah, I think I might be free. I logged in the other day to get the witch hat in the WoW, and I got it, so I was like, all right, I'm good. And then my sub runs out in like 10 days or something, so I'm like, eh. I might jump back in to check out like the Karazhan stuff, but yeah, I don't know. I don't really feel like I have to log in anymore, which is nice. So been playing Overwatch. I haven't jumped into competitive yet, but they announced the end of season 2, so I want to get that done before the end of November. So I will probably be doing that in the next couple weeks. Destiny's new expansion came out, so I jumped into that for a bit, and it's fun as always to kind of jump in and do strikes and the new quests, and they have a Halloween event going on right now, so
that's cool.
You can get like, they look like papercraft masks of like different characters, and like there's one that's like a giant eyeball that like moves around on your head. It's so good. And apparently there's a quest that you can do that makes your sparrow, that's like your vehicle in the game, it makes it look like a broom, and you can fly around on a broom, so I have to do that. Okay. I haven't done it yet.
goals.
Yeah. Like, it looks really cool, so I'm gonna jump in and try and get that before the event is over. I don't think you can keep it until, like, after the event is over, so you've only got like a limited time. Yeah, like all the cool stuff that they do with the sparrows are like short events that never come back. And it's like the sparrow racing that they had a while ago was like easily the most fun that I've ever had in Destiny, and it was only like, I don't know, 2 weeks maybe, and it hasn't come back, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that's really sad. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, like, you could, you did, like, races on set courses, and you could get racing gear that looked different. You could get different sparrows that, like, behave differently depending on, like, the speed you were going or how fast you turned. So, yeah, I don't know why. But, like, they just need to put it back in permanently.
Yeah, people could be riding around in broomsticks, like riding around inside of broomsticks, racing right now in Destiny.
Exactly. I don't know why they. I don't know what they have against keeping sparrow racing in there for long term, but I don't know. I want it.
Brands.
Yeah. We're a shooting game. We have to have shooties, no racing. And I've been playing a game on my phone called Mystic Messenger.
The notorious one.
So it's a game where it kind of behaves like a visual novel sometimes. But essentially it's like a chatting app. And when you download the app, you're like bombarded with all these questions from, it's apparently a private like chat app that you somehow got a hold of. And there's a lot of chatting and like flirting with anime boys. So I've been spending last week, like flirting with anime boys and, flirting with, there's one woman in the group. So I was like, I'll talk to her and see like what's going on. And then I ended up like doing her romance route, instead, cause mm-hmm. she's like, she's the best. And, nice. Apparently there's like 5 or 6 different routes you can take, and each like game, like the whole game takes place in 11 days in real time. So, you're getting chat messages and text messages and sometimes even phone calls from these characters. yeah, it's like, it's really interesting. And they're all like, the phone calls are all voice acted. So they have, I think the game is Korean. So they have Korean voice actors, for all of the characters, and they call you and then they'll ask you a question. You can pick, like an answer, and then they'll like respond to it. Like the only problem with it is that, some of these chats, like one of the characters is a gamer and he plays a game that's like a parody of League of Legends. And so he's up at like 3 a.m. And so you'll get text messages from him at 3 a.m.
Oh no.
If you don't answer them, like you miss out on interactions with him. So it's like,
oh.
Yeah, the chats are like around the clock. Which, yeah, and I know, like, I have definitely woken up for a 3 o'clock one before. I don't know. It's just, like, it's so interesting. And I've heard, like, a lot more people getting into it lately. And it's really cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I saw it took my, circle of Twitter by storm, and actually thank you for going into a bit more detail about like the time frame that it takes place over Ryan, because I wasn't sure before. Like I had no idea like how people were playing so much of this game, because visual novels usually aren't that long. So
yeah.
Now hearing that, it's like, oh, they spread out these like real-time chat messages and calls over like 11 days. That makes way more sense. Okay.
That's interesting though that you need to respond in real time too, because I know games like, have you played Lifeline?
Yes. Yeah.
Where, you know, it would be, you would be talking to this person and they would go to, you know, walk over to this spaceship over there, and then they wouldn't respond again for 2 hours. But then when they did respond, you had as much time as you needed to, message them back. But it's interesting, that you, if you miss the 3 a.m. message, you just miss it. Like, does he get upset with you, or does he think you're less interested in him if you miss?
I don't think so. I mean, so they have, like, a currency with hourglasses that if you do miss a conversation, you can pay hourglasses to participate in it. But to move ahead in the game overall, like, if you want to see the extra stuff, it's hourglasses, too. So, like, you can get them for free, but then you can buy a bunch of them as well if you want to. But, like, if you miss a chat, like, I think one time I missed it, and I was like, oh, I don't want to spend the hourglasses. I'll just see what happens. So you can still read it. And he's, like, talking, and then somebody else, like, one of the other characters comes into the room and says, oh, like, Riley's not here right now. And so he's like, oh, okay. And then he'll, like, keep talking, and then he'll say something or ask a question. And they'll be like, Riley's still not here. And he'll be like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just talk to her later. And then, like, the chat ends. But in the, like, the group chats that happen, that's the only time where you can gain these, like, affection hearts that, like, move you up in the, if you're going down the romance route, that's what you need, is a bunch of romance hearts. So if you miss a chat where you could be getting a lot of romance hearts for this one particular character, then I can see, like, paying the hourglasses to do it and then moving on to the next one. But it doesn't, like, doesn't super affect it if you miss a couple, especially because, like, a lot of them happen. There's, like, at least two every day that happen at, well, like, one's at midnight and one's at 3. So if you can't, like, be bothered to worry about those, then, like, you're not missing a lot. All the big conversations usually happen, like, in the afternoon, so.
All right.
Yeah, it's pretty fun, and I'm on my second playthrough now, so it's pretty good. I like it a lot.
Are you just gonna go for specific characters, or are you trying to get through the whole thing?
I think I'll do all the routes if I can, if I don't get bored. Because there's two, I guess, game modes. One of them is this casual route, and the other one is called the deep story. And so in the deep story, there's two characters that you can romance that you can't romance in the casual story. So if you want to do their routes, you have to play the deep story. And to play the deep story, you need 80 hourglasses. So. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll probably be playing it for a while. Yeah, it is. It is hardcore. Especially, like, if you're catching all of the chats, like, it's a lot of scheduled conversations. But yeah, it's pretty fun. And, like, the app was free. So if you, like, if you're not too concerned about, like, missing chats and stuff, it's pretty easy to pick up and play and flirt with some anime boys and the one anime girl. And then aside from that, I watched the entire 3 seasons of a show called Dance Academy, which is, it's like, it's an Australian show, and it's like about kids at a ballet school. So if you like dancing and teenage high school drama and Australian accents, then have I got the show for you. It was pretty good. It kind of reminded me of like Degrassi and how they handled like teenage problems and things that come up when you're growing up.
Okay, all right, Degrassi, Australian Degrassi. Okay,
yeah, that's probably like as close as I could compare it to a show that's over here. It's pretty good. It's like a good like feel good slash fluff show that I spent like a good, I don't know, week watching like all 3 seasons. So. And then, last but not least, the new streaming service called Forge. I'm officially a partner with them, so I've been streaming my video games.
Yay!
Woo. Yeah! So that's been pretty cool.
How's the streaming been going? Have you mostly doing Overwatch, or...?
Yeah. I'll just, like, flip it on when I'm playing Overwatch, and it's easy because Overwatch is, like, constant, so there's no, like, breaks or anything where there's downtime. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've been streaming for like a couple hours at a time, and it's been pretty fun. There's like, Forge is so new that there's not a lot of people on the service yet, so like maximum I've had I think has been like 8 or 9 people in there at a time. But there's like, I'm starting to see like return people, which is kind of cool. Cool. Yeah, so I'm interested to seeing how Forge does. Like, Twitch is so big that there's almost no way that you can compete at all with it, so I'm really interested in what they're gonna do in the future to like maybe get their name out there a little more or something, because right now it's really small.
I've heard that it's a lot less laggy for communicating with your viewers.
Yeah, the delay is like 2 or 3 seconds. It's really good.
That's good. Yeah, because I always thought it was long on Twitch. Not that I streamed a whole lot, but it
Twitch
always
is at
felt
least
like
30 seconds, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Which just makes it very difficult, I thought.
Yeah, unless somebody is like using your name so you can see it in the chat for Twitch. Like, you can add somebody and it'll highlight it. But otherwise, like, especially with bigger channels, the chat like flies by. There's no way that anybody could read that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Did you notice any other, are there any particular differences about Forge that jumped out at you?
I guess the big difference is that Forge has its own app. So you stream through that app instead of streaming through like OBS or XSplit and then streaming to Twitch.
Okay.
So when you stream in the app, that's all you need. You don't need anything else.
Okay, cool.
Which is kind of cool. That's all that I've been up to. Yes, Pam, what have you been doing?
I've been playing a few things. The new Civ 6 came out last week, I think. So I bought it immediately, even though I was like, you know, money's kind of tight. Games in Canada are so expensive, but I bought it anyway, and I played it a little bit, and then I requested a refund, actually. Oh. Not because it's bad, but just because it's, like, super addictive. Mm. Like, it's fun, but it's more addictive than fun. So,
yeah,
it's, like, I don't know. But I didn't get my refund because I had already put 12 hours in. So, oh. Yeah, because the last Civ 5, I think I've put like 160 hours into that. But it's cool. They made some changes over the last one. The biggest one is that cities are no longer sort of stacked on one tile anymore. They sort of spread out, so it's more visually interesting. And the graphics have changed to a little bit more of a cartoony style, which some people I heard don't like, but I think it's kind of fun looking. So, yeah, I don't know. I like it. It's one of those games that I can sort of play on my laptop while I'm watching something or something like that. But it's just, I have a problem with Civ and just playing far forever? Too much of it. Exactly. Yeah. So I tried to get it away, but it didn't work. So now I have to play it more. Mm. What else? I started the Telltale Batman series, but I only played maybe 20 minutes of it, so I don't have a whole lot to say, although it just seems like, you know, another Telltale game.
Yeah.
So I'll probably have more to say about that later once I've played more, although I might wait until all the episodes are out before I actually go through it.
That's how I like to play Telltale games.
It seems like this one is coming out a bit quicker than they tend to, so that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. And then Borderlands 2, the Handsome Jack Collection, so 2 and the pre-sequel, were free on Xbox One. I'm not sure if they're free forever or if they were just free for this weekend because there was like a free online weekend, but I downloaded that and I started playing through Borderlands 2. I had played a little bit of the first game, but didn't ever finish it. I really like Borderlands. I feel like I know more about it since I did play the Telltale Tales from the Borderlands game.
Me too.
Yeah. So that was actually one of my favorite Telltale games. So it's great to see just how they took the style from that and incorporated into the Telltale, because it's just like a very attractive, stylish looking, clever game. Like, I love all the little musical interludes and all of the character introductions and things like that. The actual gameplay and the shooting is sort of like, but the rest of the game is so interesting. So we'll see how far I get there. And I'm also playing alone, though. So apparently it's better multiplayer, but I don't have that many Xbox friends.
Xbox. Yeah, I have it on PC, so.
Mm-hmm. What else? I started watching Westworld, which is the new, I think it's HBO.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yes.
The new HBO show about this sort of created world that takes place in the Wild West with all these very believable human robots. I've only seen 2, maybe 3 episodes so far. Seems like everyone's talking about it right now, but I'm having a hard time suspending disbelief. Like, it is a J.J. Abrams show, so I'm sure there's going to be this grand Lost-style mystery that will be intriguing. But just the idea of the show of, like, first of all, maybe I'm just naive or too optimistic, but all these people who just want to go to the Wild West so that they can cause chaos and kill people is, like, kind of unbelievable to me. And also just the fact that there's all these scenarios that play out where these robots that look like humans get murdered and have terrible things happen to them. And then these guests watch it all. It's just like, what about the psychological trauma? Like, does not everyone come away from this with PTSD? Like, it's sort of, I don't know. Maybe I'll watch more. Have either of you watched any of it?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I haven't either. I wasn't even aware of it until I saw, like, a minor, like, Twitter explosion all at once about it. It's like, what the heck is Westworld? Is this like a Western water world or something? What's happening?
Yeah, so I don't know. I'll probably watch more of it just because I do that even when I don't like things.
Gotta see it through.
The hate watch.
Yeah. And then I started listening to a new podcast, which is Get It Right, which is Jamie Broadnax's new podcast. And her and a guest talk about a topic for, 30 or 40 minutes. And it's been really good so far. The first episode was about sex in Game of Thrones, and the second episode was about reproductive justice in hip-hop music, and they're really good. They're really interesting conversations, so I definitely recommend that podcast. If anyone is looking for more stuff to subscribe to, it's all just sort of general media stuff.
Wow, damn, I'll check that out.
Yeah, anything Jamie Broadnax does is usually pretty good, so... and then I read a book called Throne of the Crescent Moon, which is a fantasy series, or I think it was supposed to be a series. I'm not sure. There's only the one book out right now by Saladin Ahmed, and it's a fantasy novel about a ghoul hunter and all of his adventures fighting the forces of evil. And what makes it interesting is that it's all set in a Middle Eastern setting, so it's not the typical medieval Europe fantasy novel. So it was really good. I really enjoyed it. I had read a book of his short stories before, which I also really liked, though I can't remember the name. But it's really good. It's sort of a fast read, but it's got good characters and really good world building and stuff. And it's just, a little bit different than the normal Game of Thrones type stuff.
Yeah, that's really cool. Like, I love that fantasy cribbing from more non-white cultures is showing up a lot more. Stuff that takes place in different regions, obviously actual authors being from different backgrounds is being made and really just being more visible. I guess they've always been made in some volume, but it's just great that it's more at the forefront now. Like, I imagine someone has the sort of experience reading that book that I did when I checked out, like, the Concrete Park comic, which was like this Afrofuturist comic that's still ongoing that I just had this visceral positive reaction to, because it's like, oh my goodness, I finally see all these, like, cultural touchstones and ways of talking and certain, like, body types being valued and slang being something that just gets thrown around casually in a way that's not, like, stereotypical. Like, man, that's really refreshing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's nice to see something a little bit different. And I think that makes a pretty good segue onto our topic for this week, which is Luke Cage. So for anyone not familiar, Luke Cage is a Marvel superhero who has superhuman strength and unbreakable skin. And he first appeared in comics in 1972. He's made numerous appearances in comics, in movies, and television since then, but his most recent revival is in his own show, Luke Cage, which is a Netflix show, and he was first sort of introduced into the current MCU, I guess, in Jessica Jones, which was also a Netflix show from, I think, last year. First of all, does anyone read the Luke Cage comics? I'm not a comic person, so I have not myself, but...
I have, And I'm gonna do like my best during all this. Like I really want to make sure that I'm not just doing like a direct comparison thing like this, or oh, it's bad because it's not like how it was in the comics. Actually, oh, no, a really good lens for it is like just because of the time that original comic came out. Like it's been really interesting for me to see how things got translated into the show, because like yeah, Luke Cage still had some series here and there in the 80s and 90s, but he hasn't really had like a solid definitive version since that like initial Hero for Hire series. So seeing the little tweaks and stuff that were made, and of course the big move of having tons of black people, particularly like a black showrunner, have their hands on this blaxploitation character and be able to move things around and rearrange things and decide a new direction for him and the cast of characters that he comes across, like got Mariah in particular, is like a huge turnaround, because let me tell you, in like the hundreds or thousands of characters that Marvel's made, boy howdy, Black Mariah is in the top 10 most offensive characters of all time. Like she was that bad.
Oh no.
Yeah.
So originally, were the comics like, were there no black people like writers, creators in the comics? Like, was it just
right? Yeah, not at all.
Oh, okay.
All right. It was made by white guys in the early 70s. That I think here and there you will hear stories about Marvel in the 70s that kind of definitely goes against their kind of usual multicultural kind of take on things in progressivism. Man, that I will say for the initial Luke Cage comics that Archie Goodwin wrote, at least it that guy, for a white dude, made the best of a pretty kind of messed up premise when you started thinking about it a bit more. Like, you know, the whole story of Luke Cage is he's this guy who's initially introduced. He doesn't have a full name. He's just called the man they called Cage. And, you know, he's the big dude in prison and gets kind of bullied by this guy Shades and has a racist, prison guard who's, you know, tormenting him, and he gets a chance to potentially earn his freedom by taking part in a science experiment, you know, being experimented on by black man being experimented on by governor a government institution for seedy reasons. And yeah, he breaks out, and I one of the main differences that I'm seeing that I saw on the show that I found kind of curious is that they don't really give Luke Cage a mercenary phase like he did in the comics. Like, he was never a bad guy or anything, but he was an ex-con who just like escaped from prison and had like a funky outfit like he does during that origin episode in the show.
Oh.
And he, because it was the 70s and, you know, Shaft had come out and was big along with other blaxploitation movies, he was kind of like a private detective but with superpowers. He was like, well, I have these powers and I need employment, so I'm opening up this office right above or across from a movie theater, and I'm just, people are going to come to me about their problems and I'll try to solve things for them. I'll be their hero for hire.
Right.
And the fun twist with him was like, most of the time he didn't even take money for the jobs, because it would either be some massive plot twist where the person who was the villain all along was hiring him for a convoluted reason, or the person would be really poor and he felt unethical taking money from them. So it was a real pulpy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the current incarnation of Luke Cage?
just the character or like the overall
Yeah, show? The character himself.
You know, I'm not quite sure. It was kind of hard to get a read on him, totally mm-hmm. just because of the structure of the show. I'm not sure if either you felt that way.
Yeah, I felt, I mean, the big thing I got from him was that he just sort of wanted to be left alone, and he was a very reluctant superhero. I found that the side characters were much more compelling than Luke himself.
Oh, yes. I definitely agree.
I would agree with that. It almost felt like he got pushed into it. Like he didn't really want to do it, was trying to lay low, and then kind of ended up having to go and do some, I guess, like, in quotes, like superhero stuff.
Mm-hmm. And he also seemed like, I mean, he was an outsider here. I mean, I think he was from Georgia originally, and he was in prison there. So whereas the rest of the people sort of in Harlem, like, they had their own very sort of close-knit community, I always felt like Luke was sort of an outsider who's never was just kind of being forced into it rather than wanting to actually be in there with everyone.
Yeah, it's the way the plot was kind of structured kind of had me feeling like they were gesturing either indirectly or maybe directly having sort of a fish out of water story a bit, but it never quite went far enough. Like after the aftermath of Cottonmouth's death, the story kind of pulls out of being a really Harlem specific story a bit. So I mean, that was something that really stood out about the earlier episodes, at least, was how much that just the general ecosystem was being built up, like how much Pops being a cornerstone of the community and Cottonmouth's influence having a hand in all these different pots, and Councilwoman Mariah Dillard, her, you know, the comparison of like the political side of things and the criminal side of things, and how deep their family connections went with everything. That was all really interesting, and Luke didn't really fit into that so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Now, speaking of Cottonmouth, for me, he was the star of the show. Like, I felt like when he was on screen, everything stepped it up a notch. Like, the music was so good, the camera work was so good, all the framing of the shots, like his location, that round window in his office, that portrait of Biggie in the background, that just like mm-hmm. they managed to do some really cool things when he was on screen. I almost felt like he was the creator's favorite as well. So I was very shocked when he died. Yeah. Not even halfway through the series.
Do you have anything, Riley? Because I have such a reaction, a positive reaction to what Pam said.
I just remember like the shot where he's framed by the crown on the poster in the back, and I was like, oh my god, this guy is so cool.
Yeah, that was so good. Like, yo, Pam, I am 100% with you. Like, I was so into the Cottonmouth performance. Like, and this is like a small detail, but oh my goodness, his laugh, like, you so rarely get to hear that kind of big, huge laugh from a black character, especially a black man, on television or even movies sometimes. It was like so amazing to hear him just have this big, goofy, realistic laugh that kind of thing that I just cracked up like every time he did, just oozing charisma. My comparison I think I threw up on Twitter like weeks ago when I first started watching was like he was what if Wesley Snipes had been reborn as P. Diddy. Oh my goodness. I just loved everything that was just oozing from Cottonmouth. Just so much charisma. And the dynamic that he had with Mariah, especially upon rewatch, like the whole Mariah, Mama Mabel, and Uncle Pete subplot, their background was so very compelling. Like, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is another reason why I was so surprised when he died, because that background, I think, came in that very episode. So we were just sort of learning about Cottonmouth and sort of why he's in the position he's in. I thought we were going to get even more because he was obviously not into this as a teenager. He wanted to, you know, go into music, and he was sort of forced in it through his family. But then it was just like, boom, gone. And it was, that one really, really hit me because I thought he was the star of the show.
Yeah, yeah. Same. Like, again, upon like my skimming it for rewatching it, I kind of see like the overarching plot reason that kind of fits it well. It sort of, if you look at Luke Cage as like the rise of Mariah, like it mm-hmm. works a bit better in that context, but given like the journey you were being taken on, like it's just this abrupt thing, especially since it had this really compelling dilemma that Luke was in, where he was either going to run or he would pretty much be under Cottonmouth's thumb. And that would have been really interesting to see like an episode of Luke Cage having to do like Cottonmouth's dirty work or something like that. I was really anticipating seeing that kind of like moral wrinkle in there, and then boom.
It was interesting that he sort of dies to further Mariah's story, which is generally, I mean, a lot of the time you see women characters dying to further men's. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a great inversion of the dynamic that the character Mariah had been having. It's like, she repeatedly says over the course of the show about how, they're not like big speeches or anything most of the time, but she says, like how she's been protecting Cottonmouth since she was little, and looking after him and trying to, you know, look after all his mistakes and try to steer him right. And once I looked and tried to pay attention to like her scene, she pretty much was doing that. Like Cottonmouth got something that was both Cottonmouth's like big problem, but also something that made him really compelling, especially for how tight like that early series, that early half of the series was just he's not like a big grand villain like all the other Marvel antagonists, you know? Like he is like the Harlem crime lord, and that's all he really wants to be. That's all he kinda knows in this position that he was kind of reoriented into. Like he has these aspirations about, you know, wanting to have like this big musical backing to things, which is why he has these amazing guest spots and singers come in, like fucking Raphael Sadiq in the first episode, and Jadida later on. Yeah, Jill Scott, the Delphonics were in there. That Cotton Club was just an amazing way of getting a lot of like guest stars on there and an excuse to have like really awesome music filtered in through like the lens of the setting and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did a great job with the music, I thought. We actually did get a question from, well, not so much a question, but Zoofy, S-O-E Zoofy on Twitter, asked, can we please talk about that soundtrack? And yeah, the soundtrack was such an integral part of the show. I mean, even down to how every episode was named after a Gangstar song. It was such an important part, and it was so good. All the music, all the musical acts in the club were fantastic, and they integrated so well. And also just, you know, a lot of new acts to, like, look up their music afterwards and listen to it later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I especially loved how the closing musical act from when Mariah fully takes over is a black woman triumphantly singing.
Mm-hmm. It was... I think this is probably one of the best show soundtracks I've heard. Everything was just fantastic.
Yeah, in that, like...
Yeah, the episode, I think it was episode 5, where it starts out with Jadena. I think that opening was amazing. I'm sure I, like everyone else in the world, immediately went out and downloaded that song.
It's so good. I'd heard Classic Man, but not that one. And even just the blocking for that scene, like Jadena doing that dress rehearsal and repeatedly raising his hand and pointing up at Cottonmouth every time he said "Long live the Chief" was so mm-hmm. great. Mm-hmm.
So we talked about Cottonmouth being a sort of down-to-earth kind of villain. When he goes, well, two things happen. First of all, we get some more development from Mariah and Shades, which I think was a positive, but then we also get Diamondback coming in as the major villain who you find out was in charge and who Cottonmouth was answering to this whole time. What do you think about Diamondback?
Oh, boy. Riley, do you have anything, by the way? I'm sorry, I've been talking a whole lot.
No, that's okay. About it. I felt like he kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know if there's, like, a connection between Cottonmouth and Diamondback, because aren't those both species of snakes?
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if there was... If that was, because it seemed like Cottonmouth got that name fairly early on, and I'm not sure if Diamondback was around back then. So, yeah, I wondered if that was a thing, if there's going to be more snake names at some point. Was that a thing from the comic at all? Do you know?
Diamond? Yeah, they were both in the comics. It's, so, another one of the inversions that happened with the show is, like, the way things were framed in the comic was... the original villain that Luke Cage faced was Diamondback, Willis Stryker, who was like his childhood friend who got mixed up in some mob stuff and ended up framing Luke Cage for something that he did. And they sort of keep that backstory a little bit, except they added in what I think is the unnecessary wrinkle there of him also being Luke Cage's, like, half-brother, which, what? Mm-hmm. Like, they look nothing alike. And also, Cottonmouth seems, like, 10 years older than Luke or something. Like, what in the world?
Yeah.
I mean, Diamondback seems, like, 10 years older than him.
Yeah, I didn't... I thought that that whole thing was sort of unnecessary. The whole, like, sort of Cain and Abel story to it. And also I just found, like, when he first came out, because we had heard his name a few times, and then after Cottonmouth, I was expecting, you know, something great to replace him. But it just, he came out, and I was like, this guy is the head of this vast criminal organization? Like, he's nuts. How is he managing this?
Like, I look at that and I'm like, shades. Like,
yeah.
That had to have been mostly
that
shades.
That was my exact thought. Like, he's got shade. Like, there's got to be something more going on with shades, too. Like, especially, like, the scene where he, where they gather, like, the big crime lords together, and then Diamondback shows up and shades, like, his, like, fists kind of clench, but at the same time, it's like, dude obviously, like, invited him there or something. Like, he's running some shit behind the scenes.
Yeah, so, Diamondback, I really didn't like Diamondback. Like, he sort of fulfilled that purpose, I guess, that Shades mentions in dialogue to Mariah when right after she kills Cottonmouth, of saying, like, nature abhors a vacuum, you need to get stuff together immediately, or else things will go real bad, things will plunge into chaos, and Diamondback's pretty much that chaos. I get it. I don't like it. I sure as hell did not like the way things played out.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think Shades is interesting, but before we go on to him, I just wanted to just more on Diamondback. He also sort of feels like a much more cartoony, like, comic-y character than basically anyone else in this whole show. He seems kind of out of place, especially at the end where he's got his super-powered punching. What did he get called? Javon? No. Oh, I forget the designer's name, but something Stormtrooper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he just, I don't know, it just looks so silly, and I felt like what was going on sort of behind the scenes was still really interesting, but the main Luke and Diamondback conflict wasn't, I don't know, it really didn't do anything for me.
Like, the series seems so grounded, and like, it could be real, and then Diamondback kind of comes in with his, like, super gun, and then his super soldier guy.
Yeah, and he, yeah, I don't know. I mean, you have to suspend disbelief a bit, but, I mean, he's proven himself so good at murdering people, and he, like, I understand the first time he shoots Luke, it's because he wants to, you know, reveal his grand plan and the truth about that they're brothers and everything, but the second time he shoots him, and he shoots him in the shoulder, and then just leaves a garbage truck to take him away, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
So I'm low-key real happy about this mutual reaction y'all have had, because I didn't want to be the one who came on the show. It was like, oh man, like that second half, I don't know, that I really didn't like some of that stuff that was going on, especially Diamondback. But yeah, I definitely agree about the cartooniness. It's like Chio Coker got halfway through the series, and then a bunch of executives were like, hey, you know, this is a Marvel show, right? Yeah. Like, this is based on a comic book. You need to gear up for the Defenders or something, damn it. And that's kind of what Diamondback at the very end felt like, once he got those gauntlets, and then the teasing that he was going to be experimented on by the same doctor that gave Lucas powers when he was in critical condition. I was like, oh my god, they're, like, trying to build him up as, like, a main villain for their Netflix team.
Gosh,
to face off against
scary.
Or something, aren't they?
You know?
No,
like,
no, he's not. He's just an asshole.
Yeah.
So we also got another comment from Hoodie13 on Twitter, and he says, Shades, I kind of got a holding a torch for Mariah vibe from him. Couldn't get enough of Shades. I do think Shades was one of the interesting characters there. I wasn't sure of his history. It sort of hinted at things. I think during the flashback of Cottonmouth, he mentions that he had been hanging out with him, I think. That was who was being referred to. But I wasn't totally sure, other than that, sort of where he came from and how he ended up in the position he's in.
Wasn't he in prison with...
Yeah, he was in prison with Luke.
And that was such a funny thing where, like, he was... Back in the comics, like, he was just this weirdly throwaway character. Like, you know, a thing that comics would just do all the time, even for, like, so-called low-tiered heroes, is, like, introduce these antagonist characters or try to really build a supporting cast and just have, like, these defined characters. You could refer to them and be like, oh, that person was the Luke Cage villain, blah, blah, blah. And, like, Shades was one of those people in the prison. He would always, you know, have flashbacks like, oh, it's Shades. But, I, you know, it was always really toothless to me when I was reading that. And then you get to the Netflix show, and he is, like, astronomically better than I was expecting. Like, boy, he just has, like, a very quiet charisma about him. He's a very sure character, a very mysterious character. Who definitely does have a more than just a torch. My God, he is way, way into Mariah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like how he sort of gets her into it, gets her in charge, because he seems like he doesn't want to be the one in charge. He's like sort of the man in the background.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely wants to be in a better position, but he seems most comfortable being number two. I guess that makes sense, since he's much less likely to be the one who, you know, gets their head chopped off or anything. You know, he's not right at the forefront. But yeah, he just had like this genuine... loyalty to Mariah and Mama Mabel that was oddly compelling, because it's not something that you expected to see.
Yeah, one thing I found interesting was that they sort of set it up where Cottonmouth or Diamondback's gang is sort of at odds with, like, the Mexican gang, and like, I think Shades is he Dominican? He's Latino, but because they set up that there's sort of like a black Latino but conflict. So it's interesting that Shades manages to get all his way up in this particular gang or enterprise.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. I guess Shades, since he was young, was always running with that crew. I mean, initially when they were young, Pops and Cottonmouth and Chico's dad, that's pulling way back from early in the series, were all part of the same group. So I guess this is not too far to think about Shades having been the same situation, probably running with them.
Yeah, there's all sorts of interesting backstory that they could reveal, or that they could just let people wonder about.
Yeah, I'd like to see some of it. I think, like, for season two, I definitely love to see Mariah's background. We sort of get it by proxy through way of Cottonmouth, just inherently by way of, you know, them have come up in the same household and dealing with Mama Mabel and the abusive uncle. And man, that whole episode, did either of you have particular feelings about that origin when it came to those dynamics with, like, Uncle Pete and Mama Mabel?
I thought that was, like, the strongest episode of the show. It was interesting to see that, because I didn't see the end of that coming with the uncle being killed. But, yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say about the dynamics of it. I don't know. I thought that was one of the cooler backstories, and I thought it was going to go a little bit further than that.
Yeah, I thought it was one of the best ones too, and like, I'd love to see like what Mariah did after that, like having a flashback that shows her like at the boarding school that gets mentioned, or starting a transition from being in more of a violent street environment to picking up politics and all that. I think that could be cool.
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I think Mariah is being set, has been set up to be the main antagonist in season two, if there is one, and it would be nice to see more of her backstory, because she's always just sort of sitting there in the background, just always doing her work, sort of numb to any violence taking place around her. She doesn't seem to have a problem with it, but she doesn't seem to want to participate in it directly.
I thought it was interesting, like, because when Uncle Pete gets shot, she kind of shows up, and there, I don't remember there being any, like, explanation for why she's there other than to kind of be a support, but she seems really angry, and we don't really kind of get the background of that until she kills Cottonmouth, because Cottonmouth is saying, like, you wanted it, like, you obviously wanted the attention, you wanted, like, you know, and then she smacks him over the head with a bottle, pushes him out the window, and when she's like, when she's like smashing him with the mic stand, she's like, I never wanted it. So I thought that was a really powerful moment for her.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That just kind of like, it's just sticking with me. Like, I can't forget it.
Yeah, that was huge, and so was, God, there were just so many great, great moments with the black women on that show.
They were amazing. Like,
yes. We didn't even talk about Misty Knight.
She's perfect. Was, I love her.
Yeah, Misty is great. I loved her at the beginning. I mean, I loved her all the way through. And when her and Claire teamed up to beat up Shades, that was like, oh, yeah, get him.
Yes. That was so tight.
That was one of my favorite parts. I liked Misty, and I liked that she was sort of very optimistic. I maybe a little too optimistic. Like, she was a police officer, and she really had a lot of faith in that institution, which is probably a little misguided, but she was very, you know, we'll take care of it. We'll do this the right way. We don't need any vigilantes kind of.
Yeah, I agree. I felt like, boy, some of the cop stuff on that show, it, you know, it felt a little bit like a concession, maybe, because of how much the show was just digging very much into blackness and Luke Cage being this vigilante and the sort of crime story they were telling. It almost felt inevitable that the question of how Luke Cage's and the supporting characters' attitudes towards the police would have to be. And man, I feel like the show definitely held back a little bit. It probably could have went in a bit more, but I get it. Like, I get that maybe you do have to have Misty be a bit more optimistic and show things a bit more sympathetic way for them. I was a little bothered that the black child towards the end that gets beat up by a police officer in one of the interrogation rooms, that's not really addressed too much after that. Like, this seems like a pretty huge thing, and it's really just like a tiny bit of a springboard for Mariah to latch on to as she transitions to become like a community activist leader instead of a politician after she pretty much gets barred from her seat.
And what about Claire? I like that she got to be more involved in this series. I mean, she came into it in Jessica Jones. She was in Daredevil. But this is seems like the first time, although I haven't seen all of Daredevil, where she actually gets to be part of the story. She doesn't just sew up the hero of the day and go on her way. I liked that she was actually an integral part of Luke's story.
I don't really remember a lot of... I didn't like Daredevil very much, so I didn't watch a lot of it. I just remember her, like, sewing him up. I don't know if she, like, goes out and helps out in that series.
Yeah, so this was my first time seeing her. I had heard about her, and, you know, when I first heard about her being casted for, like, the Marvel stuff and that she was going to be in Daredevil, I was like, oh, shit, is she going to be Elektra? Like, no. Like, oh, well, I don't... What? Why? What's happening? But now that I see how things have played out for her, at least in Luke Cage, it's... That she's pretty well defined. Like, she's a pretty cool character. I like that. Even though she has some, definitely has some strong idealism about, like, superheroes. I love that she's a nurse. She can patch people up. She's very smart. Thinks on her feet. Also very street smart and tough and beats the hell out of people when they mess with her.
Yeah, her introduction was particularly good, where she chases down the mugger to take her purse back.
Yeah, I'm definitely team give Claire her own Netflix series.
Gosh, that'd be cool. Like, follow her day-to-day activities, and, like, she goes and, like, just patches up superheroes, and then she, like, leaves and she comes home after a long day and she's, like, sitting there like, fuck.
Yeah, there's so much room for spinoffs and things, because basically everyone is in the comics a superhero in some way. Like, I think Misty Knight becomes a superhero, doesn't she?
Yeah, she doesn't have powers, but she also becomes a vigilante. Yeah. Pretty much doing her thing.
One thing I didn't particularly like, again, at the end was the whole we need to be protected from the superheroes angle, which I feel like, I don't know. I feel like it comes up too often now, and it's like, leave it to the X-Men to be like, to cover that territory and just let these superheroes, you know, be superheroes. I don't know how other people feel about that, but every time they're like, oh, well, he has superhero powers, he's obviously going to use them for evil. I just kind of, I feel like that's just another layer that doesn't really need to be there.
Yeah, with that thing, actually, did you have anything, Riley?
gosh, I mean, just that I know it, like, it feels like it does come up a lot, especially, like, I think Marvel lately with, like, Civil War, too, they were doing that. So it's like, I don't know. Although I can see how, like, people without superhero powers would be scared, you know, about not being able to do anything. Like, what if something bad happens? And then, like, there's all the mentions of the incident, which is, of course, like, the first, I think the first Avengers movie, where, like, New York gets invaded by, like, aliens and stuff. And so it's like, all this is happening because the superheroes are doing this stuff to, like, bring it down upon the, like, you know, the regular people. I like seeing the big, huge conflicts, but on the other hand, I like seeing, you know, what happens to those people after, and, like, what it does to, like, the infrastructure, because, like, things get blown up and important buildings get blown up, so I like seeing the consequences to that, too, so I'm kind of torn.
Yeah, me too. I like, well, I'm particularly definitely a fan of, like, the small-scale stuff of how it affects people on the ground, like, in the sociological elements of all of that. Like, I was actually really upset at Luke in the first half of the series, when he immediately starts busting out Cottonmouth's operations. Not because of, like, out of sympathy for Cottonmouth or anything, but I was like, Luke, you did not take even a moment to really think about what you're doing here. Like, you realize this is going to have a lot of blowback. Like, there's a reason why Pop was like, I'm going to try to do a parlay. Like, not once does Luke try to negotiate or anything until it's way later down the line.
Yeah.
And I thought, like, if they always knew they were inevitably going to end the series, end the season at least, with that, you know, questioning superhumans kind of thing, I kind of wish the episode where Cottonmouth goes around and, like, extorts people and breaks their stuff and blames, like, Luke Cage fucking up the balance of things as the problem, I kind of wish that played out for, like, another episode or two to really have, like, the consequences of that reverberate a lot more, instead of everything just kind of getting wrapped up in a bow by him speaking at the church. Like, the same episode.
Yeah, they definitely could have, like, played that out longer and made the consequences, like, they could have made the consequences a lot worse. Like, people could have died, like, especially when he shoots, like, the bazooka thing at him at Connie's. Like, that could have, like, been a lot worse, and it would have been, like, technically Luke was involved, so, like, you know, it would have been like a bigger issue that they could have pressed on, like,
didn't a lot of people
this
die?
Entire
didn't
block a... came down, like, look at all these people that are dead.
Should laugh. So I was totally team Misty Knight when she was like, fucking, like, Harlem ain't bulletproof. Yo ass is. I was like, yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying, though. For real.
All right. So we've got a question from Vasca, sort of comparing it to Jessica Jones. But before we get into that, were there any other particulars in the show that you wanted to address?
Oh, it's a small thing, but just overall with the aesthetic, again, more earlier on, I hate being that guy to be like, oh yeah, it's early on, it was the best, man, had a lot of stuff going on, but some of this carries later on as well. Just the jazz and soul and funk music wobbling in the background, and this miniature theme around definitely the Stokes's, about the new Harlem Renaissance and citing all of these, you know, big, prolific black figures and inventors and stuff, with her, like, naming the different complexes after them, really trying to give this framing of respectability to everything she wanted to do, to try to seem legitimate. Cottonmouth having a lot of these like new retro acts, like Currents, Raphael Sadiq and stuff, doing all of this throwback music to kind of, like, give this air of legitimacy to his club. Be like, yeah, this is what it's all about. I love that. It wasn't a huge thing in the entire show, but I definitely love that subtle little theme there.
Yeah, I like that, and I agree that it did sort of get lost near the end. It sort of came back, like, right at the very end, where Mariah was taking over again and again trying to portray that. But yeah, it did get lost while the club was being shot up.
Like, hey, Gotham didn't, Gotham's divisive with that first season. A lot of, like, the Fish Mooney stuff. Like, hey, the closer you get to Fish Mooney in anything, you know, the better. You know, that's what I say.
All right. So we've got one last question and comment from Vasca on Twitter. He says that he thought that after the death of Cottonmouth, the show had issues, the Super Bullet was rather lame, and Diamondback, who was always the great puppet master, just puts on a suit and comes to fight Luke at the end in public, really? Overall, I love the series, but I think Jessica Jones had better writing for the second half. Before that, I thought they were at least on par. So, Jonathan, have you not seen Jessica Jones?
Yeah, I can't speak to it as much. Oh, okay. I only saw like the first third up to half of it because of kind of a really specific problem that I really hope that like season two of Jessica Jones addresses. I feel like, I mean, Luke Cage was definitely a really good balm for this, but Jessica Jones really wasn't treating the black people in that show very well. Definitely not a conscious thing, but when is it ever really? It's definitely like a casting problem of like, it's like, man, yeah, you have her kind of the scenes with Luke Cage being very like the sex scenes all being very like rough with this like large black man getting it on like a skinny white lady that seemed oddly, you know, a little fetishy. Jessica Jones kind of repeatedly ruining the lives of various black women specifically on that show, just inadvertently. The junkie friend, sorry, the drug addicted friend that she, you know, is sometimes like really, really mean and aggressive towards being black, and that whole hospital scene with her needing to, I think, get files or something like that. So she shoves him like into a cart in real life very easily could have been a fatal thing that could have gotten him shot by that cop that was standing there. Yeah, sorry, that was a mini rant, but
no, sorry.
No, that's all right. She's not a good person.
No. Yeah, I can definitely see some of those problems that it had. I think there definitely is a problem with the black character specifically, especially since there's not that many of them in Jessica Jones, but she's kind of shitty to everyone too.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that. It seemed like a repetitive thing. Mm-hmm. Like, again, not intentional, but casting-wise, like, every black person was just in bad shape on that show. I was like, shit. Oh, mm-hmm. Goodness. I don't feel super comfortable with this. But I know there was a lot of other great things about it. I know, like, the ways it was dealing with like themes of abuse and control and stuff seemed really promising.
Yeah, I thought what's his name? David Tennant.
Purple guy?
Yeah, what's his name in the show?
Kilgrave?
Yeah, that's it. I thought that he was a great villain. Like, he was terrifying on a number of different levels, and I thought that it showed her relationship to him and sort of the damage that he had caused her in very good ways. I thought that was very well handled, although I did find that even the second half of Jessica Jones got to be a little too much. Like, Kilgrave is very, very powerful in that he can make anyone basically do anything, and after a while I got to the point where I was like, okay, this is getting a little excessive now, which I sort of felt similarly about both shows in their sort of back half of the series.
Wow, so that's an interesting thing there, where it's like the idea of having like a sole villain for a whole season isn't like a bad idea, actually, but it's like with Jessica Jones, like their villain that they were using was actually just way too strong in some ways, it sounds like, that to where it just got kind of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It did, yeah, a little. That's like, I don't know if that's, I feel like for these properties, I'm glad they're on Netflix. I think that's like the perfect platform for them.
Yeah.
But like, especially comparing, like, say, Diamondback to Kilgrave, Kilgrave seems, like, scary almost the entire time, whereas Diamondback kind of seems a little, like, more goofy, and I don't know if that's them, like, trying to make it more like their other, like, the Marvel movies that are out now, where they're, they have like a lighter feel to them than, say, I don't know, like X-Men or something, where X-Men is like always gritty and dark, and then Marvel has occasionally got this like dark, but not like super dark, and then they go into like sometimes they can be like really goofy and the jokes are silly and stuff like that. So I don't know if they're like trying to bring that into some of their Netflix shows and it's just not working. Like the mediums are so different, so it's
yeah I don't know. It's definitely a curious thing overall, though, that even with only like 13 to 14 episodes, we're still seeing pacing problems with these Netflix shows. Like, oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's true.
Fucking stuff's hard.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're trying to push too hard for, like, Defender stuff, where they're like, we gotta get all these shows out so we can combine them together.
I think so, maybe.
Yeah.
And actually, as a question, brought up like Jessica Jones and Kilgrave earlier, is he still around?
No,
she killed him.
Okay.
Yep, she killed him. Right. Spoilers. Yeah, they actually mentioned that in Luke Cage. Mariah says,
oh, wow.
Oh, one of these people broke a man's neck because apparently he was mind controlling her. She just makes a brief note of it when
Yeah. I remember that now. She mentions like a Fisk from Daredevil in the very first episode, so I picked that up. But I forgot
I think they're getting a little sort of heavy-handed with the crossover talk. like Claire mentioned, I know a good lawyer, like three times.
Several times, And she's just like running through these different shows, like,
they're like,
man.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget Daredevil, guys.
Yeah.
I'm so glad Rosario Dawson is getting that paycheck after so long of having, like, you know, very, very spotty appearances. But goddamn, like, she's is she gonna show up in Iron Fist 2 somehow?
Probably.
Oh yeah, Iron Fist is probably where Misty Knight will go. They end up together, don't they?
Yes. I forgot about that.
Trying to forget.
Shit.
Yeah,
that's what YouTube clips are for. I don't know.
Yeah. There's so much sort of interconnectedness, and I kind of wonder, just like on a practical real life level with all these actors, like if it's gonna work where they can get them all in there to do 13 hours of television. Like, it's one thing to make an Avengers movie, but to, you know, make a whole television series and getting everyone all in the same place at the same time seems like a bit of a scheduling nightmare.
Yeah.
All right, so does anyone have any final thoughts on Luke Cage before we wrap it up?
I thought it was... It's, like, so different from, like, what we see. And it was nice to see a show where a lot of the people didn't look like me and they didn't have my skin color. And it was really cool to actually have a show with that much diversity in it. So I'm, like, super appreciative of it, and I'm glad that it's around.
And for me, you know, I'm definitely glad that the show was able to get made. And, you know, I didn't go in with any expectations about it, and I found a lot of stuff I liked. And it's always great to see the opportunity for a lot of... people of color to be able to come together and make it work. Even if everything doesn't work out, you still get some very specific cultural and personal experiences that get to show up there. And that was very nice and very cool.
Yeah, I think, I'm glad that it exists. I loved the first half of the season. I thought the rest of it was okay. Although there were some great characters, even when the plot was sort of going a little bit sideways. But yeah, I hope this leads to more opportunities to see more diverse kind of shows. And also, I'd really like to see more diversity, not just in the superhero arena, or although that seems like that's where all the money is, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a whole thing for me. Like, I cannot say how much I was relieved that, at least earlier, like, Luke Cage was not super superhero-y in that particular way that we've gotten used to, because, man, our stories are worth telling and experiencing in contexts that are not just these super amped up geek properties as well, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So thank you so much, Jonathan, for coming on the show to talk with us.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me on the show. Y'all are putting on a really great podcast, and y'all have even grown in really great ways. Like, it was already pretty solid, and it's just such a tight and fun show.
Oh, I'm gonna cry.
Oh no.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to get that kind of feedback. Do you want to tell people where they can find you if you want to be found online?
Yeah. You can peek over at my now currently way more sporadic tweets. though a lot more fashion stuff now. Transition there a little bit. I like me some good outfits. at Act11, ACTWON1.
All right. And Riley, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri. It's Kaleri with an underscore. And you can now find me on Forge's website at forge.gg/Kaleri. And it's the same. It's Kaleri with an underscore.
Yeah, definitely. Check out Riley's streams.
Yeah, keep me company. Mm-hmm.
And she's like... super excited when she kills people in Overwatch.
It's true. That's like the most pump that I ever get.
All right.
And you can find me on Twitter at Josiah_ or on YouTube at Cannot Be Tamed. And if you've got any feedback, questions, people, or topic you want to hear on future episodes of the show, you can reach out at MediaMavensCast@gmail.com or on Twitter at _MediaMavens. And again, a call for reviews. If you have nice things to say about us, you can review us on iTunes or Stitcher or basically anywhere you listen to podcasts. So those really help us out. Or you can share us. Tell a friend about us. Mm-hmm. All right, that will be it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.